Welcome to the City of Smack podcast. I'm your host, Chris Chavez. The City of Smack podcast is presented by Garmin. This is a sponsor and product that I use daily. Garmin has released its latest round of Forerunner GPS running watches, and there's plenty to be excited about. The newest watches include the Forerunner 255, 255 Music, 255S, 255S Music, Forerunner 955, and Forerunner 955 Solar. The Forerunner 255 family is the upgrade from the super popular 245. It's got all of your favorite functions from the previous edition and more battery life, Garmin Pay, and some cool features including a multi-band GPS, race day widget, and a morning report. So let's start with the multi-band GPS. This means that there's two signals from satellites coming down onto your watch to improve the GPS tracking so that your runs are more accurate with measuring the distance run and the pace that you're going at. The map also looks super clean once it shows up on Strava and Garmin Connect, so it shows that you're on the sidewalk and not in the middle of the ocean on those waterfront runs in the middle of the summer. The race day widget connects with the Garmin Connect mobile app and gives you a countdown to the number of days until your next race. It's got a Pace Pro feature that helps you stay on goal pace and factors in the race course if you load it onto the watch. They've got a projected race day weather forecast, and if you're up for it, they'll even suggest some workouts on what you should do for your next run to get you ready to hit your goals. It's fun and easy to get on your watch screen. The morning report is brand new and similarly gives you the day's weather, what you've got on your calendar for the day, and a recovery score that's pulled from your heart rate variability so you know how fresh you may feel for that day's run or workout and how you slept the previous night. For my triathletes out there, there's also new triathlon mode so you can bike, swim, and run all during the same activity while logging your transition times. Take a look down at your wrist. You may have had that thing for a while. Treat yourself and upgrade today. Visit Garmin.com. And listeners, I have an update for you. Garmin has launched its summer sale. The Forerunner 255 Music is on sale for $399.99. They're also running sales on previous models of the Forerunner series this summer, so check those out today at Garmin.com. A moment now to shout out all of the supportive listeners that helped make this show possible. Many thanks to everyone who has backed us on Patreon. It seems like we've picked up several new followers, fans, and backers since the World Championships. You can catch all of our work from Eugene on YouTube, this podcast feed, Instagram, Twitter, and our newsletter. Our Patreon backers played a pivotal role in helping make all of it happen. So thanks everyone who has signed up in the past 2 weeks. I'd name you all, but it just takes way too long, and I'm sure everyone wants to get to this interview. If you want to join the loyal legion of backers that keep us going strong, sign up today at patreon.com/sidiousmag. On Patreon, you can donate anything from $1 a month, and we even have some people who contribute $20 a month. This all helps with travel, on-location coverage planning, editing, and so much more across all the different Sidious Mag shows. For those of you who are unable to commit to a monthly contribution, you can also make a one-time donation by sending any dollar amount over to Sidious Mag on Venmo. Consider Venmo like a virtual tip jar. We had a bunch of people chip in and send some tips on Venmo. Again, way too many people to name, but I appreciate the generosity. And last but not least, I'm grateful for all of you who take a moment to shout out the podcast on your Instagram stories and on Twitter. If you enjoy the episode or have a big takeaway, let us know. And if you haven't already done so, consider leaving a rating and review on iTunes' Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Make sure you're subscribed so you don't miss an episode. Thanks, everyone, for your support. What you're about to hear is one of the many interviews that we recorded on Sidious Mag Live during the 10 days of the World Championships. It was our daily show on YouTube where we kicked back and chatted with some of the biggest athletes and personalities from the sport in our own backyard in Eugene, Oregon. If you want to watch the video for this interview, I've included it within our show notes. You can also find a whole playlist of the Sidious Mag Live shows on our YouTube channel. Be sure to subscribe on there because we're planning to do more of these in the future at other major meets and events. So on behalf of me, my co-host Kyle Merber, and John Anderson, as well as my producer, Mac Fleet, thank you for listening.
By my normal co-hosts, Chris Chavez or John Anderson. Instead, I'm sitting down with the man who needs no introduction, two-time Olympic gold medalist, former world record holder, Ashton Eaton. And I'm really excited about this conversation because we'll probably touch on some track and field and athletic stuff. But
I hope we do. That's all I know.
But, you know, it's been a few years since you have finished competing. It's been a couple of years since I've finished my career. And I guess I want to start by kind of catching up. What have you been up to? What is life like, you know, now that you're retired from your first life?
Yeah, I'm glad you said retired from your first life because I don't want to be fully retired. And I think a lot of people see athletes who retire with some success and they're like, oh, you can just retire and like go chill now. It's like, no, really can't.
Not baseball players.
Yeah, not baseball, not football players. But I think first and foremost, the priority that I'd like to highlight is the family.
Yeah, let's do that. So, some exciting news.
Yeah, so we have our son. His name's Ander. He's 2.5. And we just had our second child, our daughter. Her name's Elian, and she's 6 weeks old.
Congrats,
man. Yeah. So we're pretty excited about that.
What are you doing here?
What am I? Yeah, no, trust me. It's like, I'm going to go down and have a great day in Eugene. Brianne, you just chill up in at home and take care of the kids. No. It's actually insanely challenging. Like, way harder than decathlon, way harder than sports, just making sure that you've created this life and they, survive and have like good experiences. But it's also great. It's like the most rewarding thing I've ever done. So that's really kept us busy for the last couple of years. But initially after sport, we moved to San Francisco. So at the end of 2017, which is the year we announced our retirement, moved down to San Francisco. And the whole reason was to just change the environment. I was always interested in science and technology. Brianne kind of wanted to do something new. So we thought, let's go to where like the startups are happening and the VCs and the money and figure out like, what is all this startup stuff about and science and tech about? So when I was down there, it's been about a year just networking.
Okay, that's what I was going to ask. How quickly, like, did you enjoy any time by the pool before diving in?
Yeah, I mean, that year in 2017, I think we like officially announced retirement January of that year. Spent the whole rest of the year actually visiting friends and family quite a bit and going back to the people who supported us, but that we also neglected to try to achieve some of the things that we wanted to achieve. So that was really good. And then we packed up and moved. And then that whole kind of 2018 was meeting people. And maybe this will help athletes who are in a transition.
Largely the point of the conversation.
Yeah, exactly. Or thinking about going through it. I was just literally cold emailing people. I was looking up companies who I thought were doing interesting things.
It's kind of like the fact that you were the best athlete in the world now sending cold emails. It's, talk about a humbling experience, and you probably had to swallow some ego there at times.
Well, I think yes to a certain degree, but how should I put this? I didn't think I was like that great, if you will. So it wasn't hard for me to just, I didn't feel like that was me coming like down or something like that to try to send emails to people I had no clue, you know, what they were working on. And I knew they probably wouldn't know me. But I did use that success in sport to, I think, as like an attention grabber to try to see if they would listen. Yeah. So in some of these emails, it was like, hey, 2-time Olympic gold medalist, just retired, very interested in your field. Would you be willing to talk? And
people respond.
Yeah, they actually responded. Yeah. A lot of people said yes. So I went on a lot of visits, saw some cool stuff. And yeah, ultimately met some folks, got to San Francisco, joined a software startup. And the goal there was actually just learn from an incredible team about how companies work. Because I was thinking, man, interested in this stuff. I'm interested in companies and startups. I can go get my MBA or I can just like join a company. So I just joined a company. Was there for about a year, learned a ton. I was the 12th person on the team. Everybody was a software engineer. And for me personally, I was always juggling, should I just work or go to school? Mm-hmm. Because I was very interested in engineering. And I said, all right, to hell with it. I'm going back to school. So 2019, I left that company and started studying for mechanical engineering.
Where were you doing that?
I was doing actually community college in San Francisco because my degree at Oregon was just like a Bachelor of Arts. I didn't do any of the math or science. Frankly, was a little bit too afraid to do that and also not spend a lot of time on it. So I started these classes and I was like, why did I wait so long to do this? I mean, I just fell in love with physics, fell in love with chemistry and engineering. And at the same exact time, I went and did like a panel at Intel.
As an athlete.
So they invited me. They said, come speak with Simone Biles. We want to kind of, I think they had just announced being an Olympic sponsor. And I said, sure, why not? And it was there that I was like in the green room. And somebody who worked at Intel in their Olympic technology group, didn't even know that existed, was like, hey, we're doing something with human performance and cameras and engineering. Just heard that you're going back to school for that. Would you want to work with us? I was like,
you
okay.
You didn't have to email.
I didn't have to email. I know.
It came just, to you finally.
Yeah. And I was like, okay, yeah, let's try it out. So started out as a contractor and then did that for a year while I was doing school. And then COVID hit. So this is 2020. And I was like, all right. And then we had our son as well. So COVID hit, we had our son. And I was like, I'm going to go to work full time, stop the school thing. And we were focusing on a project for the Olympic Games, actually. And we piloted it here at the U.S. Trials in 2021. So worked on that for 2 years. Did the project through 2021. And now I'm basically part-time and full-time engineering again.
Very cool. So I guess, you know, first off, what's it like being here now,
yeah,
you know, as a suit?
Yeah, no, seriously. Well, it was strange because the project that we did at Intel involved... I don't know if some of the people have seen the graphics that they show after the sprint races where it's like the,
yeah,
the
yeah,
heat
yeah.
map. So we did that last year in kind of a more complex way. And our whole goal was like, how fast are these athletes actually running in the 100? And can we show where they hit their top speed? Can we show people what actually goes down in a sprint? Because it's not just acceleration the whole time.
Yeah.
And that went well. And that was the first time I was back at Hayward at a major competition, but I was behind the scenes. I was like in the production truck area, which is pretty gnarly, by the way. I mean, this whole setup, like this stuff is very hard. Uh-huh. And I know, you know, athletes do their thing, but to promote and show the sport, there's so much work that goes involved. So I got an appreciation for that. But it was really, really, I'd say interesting and weird being behind the scenes. I don't
it's
know.
It's weird. Like, you kind of want to be out there, but you're also, it's like, you're not as stressed. You get to enjoy it a little bit.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, live production is actually pretty stressful. I'd say the same as being an athlete getting ready to go into the blocks. You have to, like, perform in the moment.
Yeah.
So there is that aspect that I brought to it. But I don't know. It's just, it's a different world, one that I wasn't used to, but one that I felt like I should contribute to because I think it does contribute to the sport growing. So
yeah, well, so going back to something that you had said earlier, yeah, you know, touching a little bit on my experience as well, I had this thought that when I announced my retirement from, yeah, my career,
yeah,
like I post on Instagram like I'm retired, that immediately like my LinkedIn inbox would be full.
Yeah, yeah.
And it, like, you know, I had a few followers, a few fans, and I assumed one of them was hiring and, yeah, would be interested in bringing me on board and, of course, paying me triple that I was making as an athlete and, like,
yeah,
we'd live happily ever after.
And so this wasn't the case.
They just said everyone was very happy. They were, congratulations.
Yeah.
And then slowly it turned into just a lot of compliments. Like, you're going to do so well in whatever you decide to do next.
Yeah.
Like, anyone who hires you will be so lucky.
Right.
Okay, and where are they?
Yeah.
And like, do you have anything for me? And
so did you ask that question?
Well, in private conversation, not via Instagram, okay, but yeah, no, you know, as people followed up and, you know, what are you going to do? What are you interested in?
Yeah.
You know, my advice first and foremost is those, and this is what I learned.
Well, first of all, what were you interested in? What did you know?
I had a vague sense, and it was a journey, and this is, I think what you probably did right is taking your time to really figure it out and have a lot of those conversations.
Sure.
Because as I had those conversations, what I wanted to do changed and evolved.
Interesting.
And I would talk to different people. I think initially I said, I want to be in the sport. Like, mm-hmm, that, you know, I don't want to coach, but I would love to work for a shoe company or, you know, somehow stay involved in like a corporate capacity, yeah, in the sport.
That's the first thing everybody says. Oh, are you going to coach?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And then,
like, nope.
And then as I had those conversations, I realized the things that I wanted to do didn't line up with like just selling shoes, at least, yeah, you know, immediately after. I'd been trying to sell shoes for the previous 7 years as an athlete.
Sure.
I didn't want to keep trying to sell shoes.
Sure.
And so as I had those conversations and I learned about jobs that I didn't know about existed.
Yeah.
Like, you just have to be in that exploratory phase for a really long time because now, like, thinking back to those initial conversations I had compared to what I am now doing and happy doing, completely different.
Yeah. I mean, I think in a lot of ways it could be like sport in the sense that when you were on the playground doing your thing and then eventually got into running or as athletes getting into whatever it is, it's not like right away you were, you knew you wanted to do that, or you knew where it could go. When I was a young athlete, I just did track and sports because I liked it. And the things that were on TV, like baseball and football, you could see the end path. But for track and field, I couldn't see it. I mean, I saw the Olympics, but it was so far away. And I remember my high school coach brought me to the Prefontaine Classic. And being in the stands around people cheering on these athletes who run, I was like, I had no clue that track could be this. And so getting that exposure from a company or like a business perspective is kind of the same thing. You're like, I don't understand the ins and outs. I don't understand the opportunities, and I don't understand how I fit into that.
Yeah, it's kind of like starting college as a freshman, and yeah, someone asks you, what's your major?
Exactly.
You're like, I don't know, economics. And then I took one Cal class and I'm like, philosophy?
Political science.
And so until you get a little bit of exposure, and you know, one of the things that I started in a couple different ways. So, you know, having those exploratory conversations and like what I think I wanted.
Yep.
But then I did two things. I looked into a lot of rotational programs.
That's smart.
And that's very dependent on the time of year that, you know, I was retiring into a pandemic. So not an ideal time, but you know, the rotational programs I think is very unique, in which you go and you work four different jobs for a couple months each. And then at the end it's like, oh, well, that's what I really liked.
Right.
And then the other thing I thought of, and I knew then eventually I wanted to be in marketing and partnerships, which is what I'm doing now for American Express. And I knew that was where I wanted to go, but that's a very vague title. And, you know, and so, the next thing I did was I Googled companies in New York with the best work-life balance.
Oh, nice.
And, you know, maybe that's a little too honest, but
no, it's good.
I had never worked a job before.
Yeah, exactly.
Didn't allow you a 2-hour nap and a few hours of Netflix.
Exactly.
And so the idea of immediately going and, you know, trying to become an investment banker or something, working 80 hours a week, it seemed like it would have been too harsh of a transition.
Yep.
And I knew running was still going to be important to me.
Right.
You know, my family is growing as well. Daughter 8 months back home.
That's awesome. Yeah. Congrats.
Day one showing up here, she crawled for the first time.
Oh, that's amazing. Yeah. So I had to miss that.
And so I also knew that I was going to obviously continue to do Sidious Mag stuff and work with Chris and promote the sport in that way.
Right.
And so that was two things. It was one saying, you know what, I'm going to continue to stay involved in the sport on this like media side.
Yeah.
And so I don't necessarily need to scratch that itch from a work side of things. Like I can go and do something completely different and have that work-life balance. When I retired, I said I wanted running to be a hobby.
Got it.
And I think the current situation and what we do at Sidious definitely allows it to be a hobby.
Yeah.
But I work-life balance was really important to me. And, you know, it's allowed me to do this. And that's also, I think, coming to a big company allowed that structure.
That makes sense.
And the training and the exposure that we had talked a little bit about.
Well, one question I have for you is, when you retired, did you struggle with who you were?
Yeah.
And the reason I ask this is because I have heard and witnessed many athletes not know what they were if they weren't an athlete.
Yeah.
And maybe it was like some of that initial exploratory phase of like, I think I want this, but I don't really know. So I have to find out.
Yeah, it's interesting. I say this like as a joke, but it's actually serious. I think I would have been a better athlete had I been less aware of the life that comes after.
Less aware.
I think I was a little bit too dialed into the fact that like I knew it was finite. I knew there were other things out there. I have my running friends, but I also have plenty of friends who have no interest in running whatsoever.
So you think being more just tunnel visioned?
I wasn't as tunnel visioned. And so I was too prepared for the transition mentally.
Interesting.
Maybe my resume wasn't perfectly tailored and ready, but I always knew that the day would come that I would hang up the spikes and become, you know, a citizen.
Yeah, absolutely. There's still not a very good word for like, what are you when you're not a professional athlete anymore? Civilian.
Just a mere mortal. And so I sometimes wish I struggled more. I think I was too good at the transition because I also was really ready for it the last couple of years. I struggled with injuries. My performances weren't what they were supposed to be. And so by the end, it was like, I'm exhausted
for
and was excited to hang them up. I definitely look back fondly on my career. But I do think that I didn't have as much tunnel vision, especially in those final few years, as maybe would have been beneficial, because I was so aware that there was life beyond running.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, I do think that is a thing, especially being here at Worlds with athletes at this level. It's almost taboo to ask, what are you going to do after sport? It's like, wait a minute, wait, whoa, whoa.
If they're not 30, don't ask yet.
Hey. I'm here. I met the biggest competition of this year. I medaled, like whatever it is. You know, I'm going to do the same thing next year. So it makes, like, we were 100% tunnel vision, Brandon and I as well. So that totally makes sense.
So did you struggle in that immediate aftermath? I mean, you're going out on a much greater high than I was. Yeah. They were kicking me out.
Yeah. For us, it was our decision to leave. And I was aware that there was a few ways that you could stop being a track and field athlete. You could get injured. You could become old and not do as well, or you could do it on your own. And I had seen examples of all of those things, but it seemed like a majority did the injury thing, or just kind of like the fade thing. So that contributed to us wanting to retire. But also, personally, I actually never identified as just an athlete. It was something that I did.
Having 10 disciplines. Probably yeah, that's
sure.
That,
yeah. But I mean, I did sport my whole life. It was the only thing I knew, but I didn't, I don't know. I've always just been the kind of person that's like, I'm not necessarily that thing that I'm doing. I've always had other interests. And so for me, I was just ready and it was okay to say, did the things that I tried to do as best as I could do them. Maybe there was more there, more left, but this for somebody else now.
The Sidious Mag podcast is also brought to you by Article One. Article One is an independent eyewear brand on a mission to create athletic sunglasses that transcend sport. As runners, the designers behind Article One had never found a pair of technical sunglasses that matched their style. So they decided to make their own. Designed with your entire day in mind, Article One takes you from a long run in the morning to drinks on the patio to wind down in the evening. Their timeless silhouettes, paired with technical components like adjustable silicone nose pads, polarized lenses, and spring hinges, create running sunglasses that stand alone. I run in Article One's park frames in amber on my runs in Central Park. They're perfect for the summer with polarized lenses that block out 100% of UVA and UVB rays. When you're going fast, you hate when sunglasses start to slip or bounce around. That's no problem due to those silicone nose pads, which adjust to any size. They also have ends that wrap around the ears for that little bit of extra grip. I also just rock these walking around the city and sitting poolside. They don't look like your typical running sunglasses. They've got the look of the type of sunglasses you'd pick up in a store in Soho. It's been a long time coming, but Article One just released their newest evolution of their active frames. Say hello to Clifford, the H, Baron, Emmeline, and Moon. Article One is offering 20% off to Sidious Mag listeners with code Sidious at checkout. Go to Article One, that's O-N-E, eyewear.com, and enter Sidious at checkout to save 20% today. Back to the show we go.
So, you know, having that balance and doing other things and, you know, diversity of events and interests, have you found really applicable skills that maybe people wouldn't have been aware of? And then all of a sudden you get in the workplace and you see maybe other people's strengths or weaknesses and your own and how it lines up. And it's like, well, I can do this really well because I was an elite athlete.
Yes, is the short answer. The long answer is, and I think this is athletes who try to move on beyond sport, I think struggle with, what do I know or what am I doing that can contribute to anything that's not sport? What I have found after being out of sport for 5 years is that what people call soft skills, employers love. Like,
it's hard until you see it in action. Everyone has a soft skill.
Just being in like a part of a team at a big company or even a startup for that matter, the things that really matter outside of the technical skill, which is probably 20 to 30% of, you know, how you make progress, is being able to work in a team, being able to set a goal, being able to be like disciplined and relentless and trying to achieve
that
thing. It seems
so simple, right?
Yeah, it's so simple. And also, because I'm interested in science and engineering, athletes are not that far off from being like thinking like scientists. And the reason I say that is because when you go to practice every day, whether you're running or throwing or jumping, the thing that you do is you say, okay, here's the thing I'm trying to achieve. Run this, you know, interval at a certain time, throw like 50 throws in the shot and practice this one thing or try to get further in distance. And you go to practice, you basically are like, okay, I know my technique. I'm going to try to do this thing to make my performance better. You do it and you look at the results, you get a measurable outcome. And then with that measurable outcome and the feel that you got from your attempt, you think, okay, what adjustment am I going to make? So it's this like hypothesize, test, review, improve. And it's just, you do that so often in practice, like, I don't know, 50 to 100 times a day, depending on how many attempts you make in your event. And that training that you do in your mind over 10 years or however long your career is like insanely analogous to how somebody approaches just improving or finding out something new in the field of science, in the field of engineering, in startups and companies. Like, all you're trying to do is improve your product or improve your team or achieve something that day. And like everything an athlete does is totally applied to that. And you do it a lot faster and a lot better than most people just by way of your training.
I think a big thing that I found was it's hard to write all of that on a resume until it's in action.
Yeah.
You know, personally, I'm in an external facing role. And so constantly, you know, meeting people and having to present to them.
Sure.
And it wasn't until I was actually in the position that I think, you know, my boss was able to see me do it.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, I've had to give interviews in mixed zones under the most stressful times of my life, perform under pressure.
Yep.
I've spoken in front of hundreds of kids at camps. And so then the idea of like presenting a deck to one or two people, it's not as intimidating. You don't get as nervous. It's not that big of a deal because of that. But how do I say that without actually doing it?
Yeah.
And, you know, something that I think is really important is having advocates for athletes within the corporate world.
For sure.
And, you know, we were saying, like, you know, I hope that young athletes aren't thinking about the next thing at the very beginning of their career. But as you get into the twilight years in which you're like, you know, maybe one more cycle or I'll go another couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's the time to start thinking about things a little bit. But as we talk about having advocates, the inside, because you need someone to vouch and say, I know this guy, or I've worked with athletes before.
Yeah, networking is massive.
Yeah, and that's all it takes is one person to get connected to the right people. And so I do want to bring on Chris O'Donnell to join us and help, you know, I guess steer this conversation into some of the work that you guys are doing. So for those who aren't familiar with Chris, he was
most of the planet.
They, you know, some of us are very fortunate to already be familiar.
Yeah.
You were at Nike for 32 years.
Yes.
And
yes,
now you've turned your attention towards what is called the Bell Lab, and it's helping athletes make that transition to what comes next after sport.
Yes, absolutely. And my life after track has pretty much been my whole life. So it's been really interesting to hear you guys talk about the transition you made and the obstacles that you've had to overcome, or just maybe not obstacles. Well,
challenges for sure.
Yeah.
Because every athlete that I've talked to dozens of athletes over the last, you know, 4 or 5 years, everybody has a story like that. And what you guys, I think, are fortunate is that you had somebody take a chance on you without a thick resume.
Which is funny enough, the same thing was true in sport as well. You know, sometimes people take chances on athletes without great performances.
Yeah.
And so I just thought that was interesting.
Yeah. So the Bell Lab exists really so that we can reduce the number of athletes that have to rely on somebody taking a chance on them. Right. So you talked about it's tough to put those characteristics that are important to employers, which they absolutely are. And every employer knows that. But there's a lot of blocks in the system that rely on resumes and things that make it tough to get there. So the Bell Lab exists to try and help athletes reduce the amount of chances that people have to take on them.
It was interesting. When I was applying for jobs, I remember there was one company that it was a fitness running related brand. You know, like they should have understood what I had done previously. And I was talking to someone from HR initially, and it was, you know, you needed to have 2 years of marketing experience. And I was like, great, I have 7+. You know, like the thing you're trying to market is like, it lines up perfectly. And you know, the HR contact was essentially like, you know, unfortunately, I don't think this role is going to be for you because you don't have any marketing experience and we're looking for 2 years. I was like, what are you talking?
Right.
So frustrating.
Yeah. The thing I love about the Bell app, and this ties into what you're saying, and I think hopefully a message to athletes watching is that probably one of the largest untapped pools of talent from like a work perspective is the track and field community, or just the sport community
we're
for that
biased.
Matter. Yeah, we're biased, but even just
we're
even
track,
just
we're track people,
athletes in general. Because I know of several like football or basketball players who probably won't say it publicly, but also struggle with the same transition, the same thing. And so that's one thing. But the second thing is what everybody's watching on TV with these athletes performing, they do and will have lives after these sport. And it's just assumed that they're going to be great and do great things. I think Allison Felix is like a really good example of somebody who's done good in setting up that future and using her platform and brand to kind of drive forward. But then there's a lot of examples of like the athlete who struggles with kind of no idea, and they're maybe not saying or getting that help or opportunity. So that's the thing about the Bell app. It's bringing those two things together.
Yeah, and I think one of the things, and I've been really fortunate to work with people like Ashton and the other folks on our advisory board to help shape the Bell app. One of the things that's, and there's other programs that are out there that are, yeah, are helping athletes, right? Mm-hmm. Jack Wickens has got a program called Your Next Success that's really nice.
And, which is how I was able to.
Right, yeah, so that helps, right? And there's the women from Uru Sports are building a network. There's other people doing it. What's unique about the Bell app is it's trying to address the resume issue in addition to those other things by trying to give athletes real-time work experience. Mm-hmm. And I can see why nobody's done it before, because it's hard.
Yeah.
It's hard to get companies to say, yeah, sure, I'll hire somebody as an intern in the winter. You know, everybody's got summer intern programs. You would think it would be just click and drag, you know, later 6 months, but it makes people's heads spin sometimes.
It's also tough for athletes who, you know, are signing autographs, taking pictures, coming out to crowds of thousands, you know, roaring and cheering their name, to then, you know, not everyone's as humble as you and would do the cold email. You know, a lot of these athletes, then it's like, you're going to be the intern. Like you're going to do the coffee runs.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, you're going to get paid what, like how many dollars an hour? Like, and that's a transition in and of itself. You're the man. And now it's like, all right, you are the bottom of the totem pole, but you haven't been here before.
Well, but so I would challenge athletes to remember, you probably were there, right? Like when you first started in sport, you weren't the best. You had to build and you had to go through those fourth place finishes. You had to go through those injuries and believing that you could do it, but everybody else kind of being like, okay, we saw them do something once, but never heard from them again. You know, where have they been? And like an example would be Evan in the steeplechase, right? Mm-hmm. He had his injury and then he came back and fought for years. And everybody's like, where's Evan? And then here he is, you know, getting like that kind of stuff, I think is this the same thing, but I think if you're at a high level, you forget a little bit, like, oh, I used to be, and I had to fight to get back up there.
Yeah. And just seeing that characteristic and like someone like Evan, but in any athlete, as if I was a hiring manager,
right,
I would be like, okay, I think that will apply really well. That skill, that soft skill is transferable to anything that I'm doing. And that's the sort of person you'd want on your team.
Yeah, without a doubt. And I think I'm really glad you guys are having this conversation, because I know a lot of athletes will hear it. And I think it's something that athletes should be thinking about, right? And you guys talked about it, that sometimes you get the opportunity to think about it as you're progressing in your career and you are approaching that time of retirement. And that's what Andrew Bumbleow, and like that started the Bell app, he called me well before he was going to retire and he was thinking about it. There's other people that injury stops things, right? And you don't have time to think, and it's a harder transition. But I think you guys having the conversation now, I hope more athletes think about it, and I hope more companies think about like trying to break down some of those rules to allow for people either just to move right from their career in sport to the career in business, or to open up the door to an internship or project work or part-time work. Like it's good for everybody. It's win-win.
It actually can increase the longevity of an athlete's career, because, and maybe you felt this way, how old were you in 2016, 2017?
I was 27.
Okay, so you had friends who are now
29. Jeez. Engineering, science.
Subtraction, hard. So you have friends at that point who are starting families, buying houses, getting promoted, and like, you know, being directors of companies, and like they're doing really well. Meanwhile, it's like, what am I doing?
I felt so behind.
And even though, you know, they would trade positions with you in a heartbeat, but you're watching them succeed in a different industry. As you are in that position, it would probably be really helpful to kill some of those demons in the back of your head. Yeah. If you just were building your resume a tiny bit, you were doing something, you're dipping your toes in the water. Yep. And at no expense to training, you know, doing it in the off season, doing it working from home, and just finding a way to get a little bit of exposure.
Yep. Yeah.
And maybe then accelerating that process than when you do eventually make the decision to hang it up.
Yeah. I think the one thing I could have done a lot better is network. And that would be two things. One, with my fellow athletes, did it a little bit, but I should have done it so much more.
Just like hanging out.
Yeah. I don't know why I was so afraid to do that, but I just assumed that everybody else had their own training thing and like, let's not, you know, let's keep it at arm's length, which absolutely life's too short for that kind of stuff. And the second thing is network with companies or people doing things that I thought were interesting. I always get the question because I was successful. It's like, do you think you could have spared time to like go do other stuff and still has been as successful? I don't know. My answer is I don't think so.
With 10 events going on, I can't imagine.
I probably could have.
But not even the events, because I know how training is. Like, I know what sport is. You train, and then you're done at, like, 1. And then you do physio, da-da-da, and then you're done at, like, 3 or 4. And you have all this time, and then you're in the off season. And what I spent my time doing is the same as you. It's like, okay, video games or movies or, like, resting for the next day.
But it is an important aspect. It's 100%. That's not coming from a point of laziness. It's a necessary part of training.
I often think what I should have been doing is studying the engineering stuff that I already thought was interesting.
Yeah, take like, one class or
could
something.
Could have done that. So, yeah.
And I think that's a great service that you guys are providing right to other athletes right now is to get people to hopefully think differently. And that's why we named the program the Bell Lap. Yeah. We're trying to capture people while they're still...
Before they're done.
Yeah. Right. While they're still competing to make that time, mm-hmm. to invest in their future now. And then the transition hopefully becomes a lot easier.
Yeah. The thing that I just thought of that I think would be super helpful for athletes is you actually... What I've realized is you don't have to change your mindset at all. Like... What you have done to achieve things in sport and become an elite athlete is exactly the same thing that you need to do to achieve anything in life. So deciding what that is really the hard part. But to your point, it's kind of like you don't know until you just go. So if you have all these things you're interested in, just choose one and go. And then it'll kind of, you have to, I think, trust in that process. But yeah, the same methods you use to achieve stuff. So that determination, the kind of like finding a way to make it work, coming back day after day. I mean, athletes are insanely good at getting better, flat out. Like, that's right. The simplest thing. And so just do the thing and, like, use the same mindset and processes to get better.
It's amazing how much more mental bandwidth I have every day now than I did when I was competing as well. It's like now that I've been able to, shift my energy in a different direction and I don't need as much sleep anymore.
Yeah, that has been super helpful.
Yeah.
The whole 5-hour sleep thing, I'm like, this is kind of awesome.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, you used to, like, really, I got to sleep. It's true. And now, especially with kids, it's, you know, those days are done. But, you know, I think it just opens up. You can just redirect that into a whole new path. And I want to be able to communicate that as best as possible to the people in the position to make a difference. I do think that we lose a lot of really good athletes immediately after college because there's no clear path, as you were saying, after you're done competing. It's like, yes, you hope to make an Olympic team.
Yep.
But for a lot of collegiate athletes who might have that potential, that still might be 4 or 5+ years away. Mm-hmm. And, you know, especially when you look at some of the money that is available for athletes in the sport, you're just thinking, why would I give up 5 years of a career in which I would make a real living and at the end of it be in a much better position to take a risk on myself? And so I do think it all ties into just the greater participation of elite athletes for longer and just more plentiful.
Absolutely.
Totally agree. You know, we had the pleasure of working with Aaron Mallett, 110 meter hurdler, in our pilot this year, and he was reflecting on a lot of what you guys just said. Like the work that he did for a consulting company, for John Burns Real Estate Consulting, helped him make money. He's not a paid athlete, yep. But so it helped him make money. But it was the first time he'd been able to do that off his feet,
right?
You know, which helped him in his training. And there's so much, and he bought in, right? So he had to buy in, and I think that's what you guys are talking about a lot, right? Is you have to buy into this thing, and you have to commit, like you have to commit to your sport. It might only be a slice of your time as an athlete, whether it's, you know, like the last couple of years of your career or a few months in the winter time, yep. where you're carving that time away, but making that commitment, it pays off, right?
Have you spoken to other athletes?
Oh, yeah.
About, you know, I guess I'm sure your Instagram DMs are full of lots
Instagram.
Of, okay. I'm sure your email, yes. is, or however people can find a way to get in touch, is filled with plenty of training questions. But do you get athletes even today who are asking questions, or, you know, the guys that you used to compete against?
Yeah. I mean, I won't say their names, but there was a couple athletes who I was meeting with just by chance recently. And they were like, man, what do you do after sport? And so I know it's on people's minds. In fact, when we lived in San Francisco, we gathered an entire group of like former Olympians and actually ex-military people together because we were talking with these folks and they're all struggling with how to like move on past sport. And for some people, it was like 10 years since they had not been an Olympian or
had the highest of highs.
Yeah, gotten their last medal. And I was like, holy smokes, this is like a serious thing for a lot of folks. And so, yeah, short answer is, yeah, I've talked to a lot of athletes and it is something that's important to them and on their mind. And so I think the stuff that the Bell app, Chris and the crew there are doing, and these other places is really good. So you should definitely reach out if you're thinking about this and you're watching and listening. Because there is and should be life after sport. You have a lot more to give the world than your athletic performances, which you can just use that same mindset to do your next thing. And you don't have to know what it is right now.
Chris, where if people are interested, if there's an athlete involved, or maybe there's, you know, a small company, a big company, someone listening, what can they do? If this is an interesting enough conversation that they want to get involved.
Well, yes. And for both athletes and for businesses, we've got a website up and running now. It's thebellapp.com, two L's, because the other one was taken and nobody types in three of anything. So, yeah, you can hit the website. It tells you more about the program. You can apply as an athlete. You can apply to be in our kind of cohort that we're going to bring into the program this year. We're only working with 10 athletes. We want to make sure it's successful. And
I had no involvement on the 10 thing. Although I do like the number.
Just a nice
number. I think it's a good number.
A little homage to one of the advisory board members, perhaps. But yeah, so, and I would encourage athletes to at least think about this, even if you're not interested in the Bell app or your next success, whatever it is, put it in your mind, get thinking about this stuff. And any company out there, big or small, you're missing an opportunity. You talked about it, like the largest untapped potential are former athletes, talent pool out there. And I love track and field. Well, I love track and field.
I love track and field.
I love track and field from a business perspective as a former hiring manager, if you will, like the wild diversity of this sport. I mean, across every place, every measure, like the mindset of a decathlete is different than the mindset of a miler, right? So however you measure diversity, check.
Yeah.
So I love this sport because of that talent pool. It's just amazing.
This episode of the City of Smack Podcast is also presented by Hydro, a state-of-the-art rowing machine designed to transform the way you work out. Named Best Connected Rower in the Men's Health Home Gym Awards, rowing on the Hydro works out 86% of major muscle groups compared to only the 44% from cycling. That's twice the benefit in half the time. It's a perfect low-impact workout to add to your training cycle for both endurance and resistance training. I've actually seen some of the top professional marathoners using Hydro as a way to swap out their easy mile days to work up a little 20-minute sweat row. You can use a 10-minute breath row as a warm-up or cool-down before a big workout, or tackle one of the workouts on the hydro. I know one of the things with at-home workouts is that you spend a bunch of time trying to figure out what class goes with what. Hydro provides the best full-body workout. You don't have to figure out what classes to pair together. It's so much work because you're getting upper body, lower body, and core all in a single workout. Hydro's workouts are filmed live, outdoors, on waterways around the world, from Boston to Seattle to Miami to London. Plus, one membership comes with unlimited profiles for the whole family. So you'll have access to live and on-demand workouts, including rowing, Pilates, yoga, strength, conditioning, and more. With Hydro, you're guaranteed to get an incredible workout and experience a full body endorphin high. It's the Hydro High. Learn more at hydro.com. That's HYDROW.com. And for a limited time, you can use code SIDIOUS100 for $100 off the rower, and that's stackable with any of their current offerings. Visit hydro.com and use SIDIOUS100. Back to the show we go.
So before we sign off, one final question for you, Ash, and completely pivoting.
Oh, yes.
If we went over to Hayward right
now. Oh, my God. I knew it.
Which of the 10 disciplines would you score the most points?
You were
going to
ask it. I was. Score the most points?
I don't want to know the overall score. Oh, my gosh. Just which one event would you be the best at if we went over to Hayward right now?
Oh, man. You know, I did this YouTube thing with Nick Simmons where he did a decathlon, and I was like, I don't even know if I could do some of that stuff. Obviously, sprints and jumps are worth the most. Couldn't high jump, couldn't pole vaults very well. Probably long jump.
You could long jump something decent still.
Throw down a good one?
Enough to be, I wouldn't say respectable, but not embarrassed.
I have no concept of what number that is.
distance-wise, I mean, I would get over 7 meters.
Nice.
But I'd pull a hammy, probably.
One attempt, one and done.
You know what? So I live like a block from a track, and obviously, I was getting jacked up because the world's. I was like, "All right, I'm gonna go burn a 4." No warm up, really. It's like, okay.
That thought has never entered my mind.
Let's see how bad it is.
What was it?
It was horrible. The thing is, the time, I think it was like 65, 70 seconds. The thing is, I was running. My body is so unable to produce the performance that I like. Wasn't my lungs weren't tired. I was just at a constant speed and I couldn't go any faster. And I was like, this sucks.
Did you still look good?
Probably.
I don't
but
know
I mean,
if you can long jump 7 meters.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. It's only like 70 feet though. But I'm thinking like I'm on the back stretch. I'm thinking I can't go any faster. But it's just like my legs just don't move.
Oh, man.
Like they used to. And yeah, so that's good.
How often are you on like a meeting at work or something?
Oh,
and
my gosh.
Someone maybe recognizes the name or it comes up, or someone who you maybe you've been working with for a few months.
Lots.
Was like, I just found out.
Lots.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
I
you're
mean,
like, ah, enough of that.
Yeah. Or, from the company perspective, those types of things happened quite a bit early on. And then when we meet in person, it's always like, wow, you're a lot smaller than I thought you were. It's like, I used to get that a lot and still do. But yeah, so it's a thing that continues to happen.
Yeah.
Which, you know, it's cool.
I won the corporate challenge in New York, in Central Park, the road race.
Yes. And then did you get a lot of after
I got
that?
Like, a lot of people.
Were you a professional runner?
No.
A lot of people, slacked. I was, let's just say I was giving out a lot of running advice.
Yeah, I bet you. It's like, hey, yeah. How do I, what's my, yeah, that's true. Hey, I'm super excited for the Worlds. This is kind of like the dream come true, being an Oregonian, obviously University of Oregon. So excited about what you guys are doing here.
Yeah, you can look in the camera and say anything positive about City's Mag that you want.
just elevating the sport. So excited about this crew and everybody who's watching. Thanks for supporting our sport and continually being interested. The competition so far has just been unreal, more than I could have expected. I know there were a lot of questions coming to Eugene by everyone, athletes, sponsors, organizing committees. So hopefully those have been and continue to be answered in a positive way. But overall, just the human performance and the motion, it's just great.
We didn't realize how big of a Sidious follower you were until recently.
Well, I mean, this was, what am I, 34? Like, I did track until I was 30, right? And this is like a gigantic portion of my life. And for all the reasons we talk about, the sport is great. And I love keeping track of it. And I think it is important what you guys are doing, because I started in 2010, and then in 2012, it was like social media just started being a thing, just started getting applied to contracts. Like, oh, would you please tweet 10 times?
Oh, cool.
So it was like a thing that became important. And now it's obviously clear that athletes have stories and brands and are very interesting outside of sport. And so the more that you guys are capturing that here and trying to tell that and just bring people into the conversation stuff, I think it's good.
Thank you. That means
hashtag
a lot.
Good for sport.
Yeah, yeah, good for the sport. Well, thanks so much for everyone for joining us. Thanks, Chris. Thanks, Ashton. This is a great conversation. Something I personally was really looking forward to doing all week. So glad we could do it.
Awesome. Thanks, guys.
Thanks.
That does it for another episode of the Sidious Mag Podcast. We'll bring you another interview from our Sidious Mag live show soon. Thanks again for listening and supporting all of our work during the World Athletics Championships. We're eager to keep the momentum going and share more stories around the athletes and people that make this sport the best. If you enjoyed this episode, share it with a friend or leave a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. Contribute to the show, back us on patreon.org, or send over any tip or one-time donation to Sidious Mag on Venmo. You guys are all the best. You're all the best. Thanks for listening. I'm Chris Chavez. See you next time.